Jeannie, you know this. We have a workflow problem all the time because we get distracted talking about TV shows.
Oh, my God. All the time.
If I could talk Real Housewives and Game of Thrones, Insecure, and yeah, you know, the list goes on.
Yes.
I think it drives, like, Caroline, our producer, crazy.
I know. She always has to get us back on task.
Yeah.
But something magical happened, right?
Right.
One time, we got distracted by a TV show, and it actually turned into an episode. For one glorious day, our yammering about television was part of our actual job.
Yes. What a luxury.
I know.
And only because Caroline is a genius.
That's the only reason that happened.
It's her brain that would give us this beautiful idea and told us we need to, like, talk about the world of this show as a sexist workplace.
Yes. And I mean, if it's not clear yet, obviously, the show we are talking about is Game of Thrones.
Hey. It's so good.
Oh my God.
Where'd you get this, Jeannie?
This is just the magical internet. Thank you, person on YouTube. This is like my favorite remix of the theme. This is BTSW.
Battle Tactics for Your Iron Throne, baby.
I'm here with the Mother of Dragons. First of her name, Sir Eula Scott Bynoe Stormborn.
Oh, I feel so good, man. And I have the pleasure of being here with my Khaleesi, giver of tactics, Jeannie Yandel.
Ugh, I bend the knee to you anytime, sir.
Oh, my
sir.
Gosh. Thank you so much. And this is a good time to say, though, to everybody that's listening, this is clearly going to be like a spoiler episode. We're caught up with season 8, episode 4.
Yes.
So if you ain't, stop listening.
Totally. Also, if you don't care about Game of Thrones or you quit watching it because of all the sexual violence against women, totally fair, by the way, don't listen to this episode.
Yeah. Yeah. You're better than us.
Indeed. Melanie McFarland writes about pop culture and TV for Salon.com. You can find Melanie on Twitter at McTelevision. Hi, Melanie.
Hello. It's great to be back.
We're so glad you're here.
So glad to have you.
I'm excited.
Your timing is superb.
I know. We are so excited to talk about this little indie cable show called Game of Thrones.
It's so tiny. I'm amazed that you found it.
I know. Well, it feels like there's just a lot of corollary to the real world that we can talk about. So that's why we wanted to get into this.
Mm-hmm. I just found it yesterday.
Yeah, I know, right? Yeah, I know.
And dedicated 34 hours of my life to catch up.
I know. Mm-hmm. I know. I didn't actually have strep throat. I just called in sick for 3 weeks so I could watch it. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. So first and foremost, let's just set the table here, as it were. So if you are trying to become the ruler of the Seven Kingdoms, are you grappling with a sexist workplace? Melanie McFarland.
Dear Lord, yes.
Hell yeah.
Why do you say that?
I mean, I would, and I will say this to anyone who says, well, look at Cersei. I'll say, well, yes, look at Cersei. Cersei is the result of an entirely, hugely discriminatory patriarchy.
Mm. Yeah.
All patriarchies are discriminatory. When I'm saying this is to the maximum.
Yeah.
I actually brought this up. I want to say it was in the third season. She sat down with her father, and each of the Lannisters sat down with their father in kind. And this is after Tywin had come back to King's Landing to take away the position of Hand of the King from Tyrion, who had just orchestrated saving King's Landing during the Blackwater attack.
Mm-hmm.
So he rewarded Tyrion by taking away.
You did a great job. I'm going to take your job now.
There you go. I'm going to take your job.
Son.
Right. Well, he had an entire conversation with Tyrion about how he resented him being his son, which, okay, that was always clear. But the interesting thing was he sat down, and even the dynamics of that scene are amazing, because what Tywin Lannister did really well, particularly with, if everybody, but particularly with women, was he made them wait while he would sit there with his paperwork. He did it to Olenna Tyrell, and he did it to his own daughter.
Wow.
They would sit there while he was doing his important work until finally he would deign to say something to them.
Oh, my God.
Let you know where you lie in the priorities.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
So I will say we're going to talk about Cersei Lannister later.
Okay.
But also we also want to talk about who the biggest Garys on the show are, who the biggest Garys in Game of Thrones are. Like, Gary is your coworker who is a garbage person and kind of doesn't care.
Yeah.
Right. And I think, like, we can just say that Tywin Lannister is a big Gary. So we'll say that. So we have to talk about two more Garys. But I'm going to do a thing you're not supposed to do on, I guess, recap shows. I'm going to start with the end of the episode.
Of course.
Yeah. Because I want to talk about the death of Missandei, right?
Yes.
The end of the episode.
We're talking about episode four.
Yeah, the very end of episode four. We're like four episodes into the final season of Game of Thrones. And like Missandei gets her head cut off by the Mountain in front of Dany, in front of Grey Worm, in front of what's left of the Unsullied. And all I could think was like, they totally fridged her. Like, they totally fridged Missandei. Mm-hmm. Like, do you know what fridging means?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, okay.
I do, only because you told me.
Okay, so I'll just explain it for anybody else who doesn't know. So it's like a comic book thing, right? Where basically a woman character gets viciously murdered, raped, traumatized by the villain, basically to make the hero go through a really tough emotional arc. And it's like, it's called fridging because there was literally a Green Lantern comic in like 1994 or something where Green Lantern's girlfriend was murdered by the villain and then stuck in a refrigerator so that the Green Lantern would find her. Mm-hmm. And that set him off on this whole like, you know, really tough emotional arc. I mean, am I wrong about that? Like, was she, I feel like she...
Oh, it totally.
Like
the way Dany's face was afterwards.
And like, they just did it so that like Dany and Grey Worm would have a tougher arc.
Right.
I don't know.
But what was so weird was she already lost a dragon.
She like already lost a dragon.
She lost an actual child in her eyes and now her best friend.
Yeah, and her best friend. But also let's talk about the optics of that, which could be an entire other broadcast. Here's Missandei, who was a slave in Essos. And when we meet her over in Astapor, she has on... what looks like a necklace, but it's actually a collar. You never actually see her in chains.
Mm.
And at the last moment of her life, you see her in chains.
Mm. Oh, man.
And of course, there are so many things that made me shake my head about that. But that's another thing where I'm just like, you know, I hope that somebody says something about this to D.B. Weiss and David Benioff. Because remember, these are the guys who are also thinking about doing the drama, the speculative drama about slavery.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, if you can't see the problem with that, you have no business bringing that drama into fruition. But anyway, back to the fridging.
Oh, man. You're right. That could be a whole other episode.
But on the other hand, I do think it's going to make Dany mad.
Like, well, that's
I think
what it's supposed
gonna
to do.
Rile her up.
Does
but
she,
I feel
does
like
she need to be made
any more angry? She just lost a baby.
She just lost a baby. And you would think
she's beefing with her nephew lover.
Yeah. Also, you know, then there's the other thing of like, are you telling me that after all this, you know, this is a woman who saw her first dragon go down with just a well-placed lance?
Yes.
At least send out somebody. Does somebody have a falconer up in the north? Mm-hmm. Send stuff out. Mm-hmm. Send out a raven. You know, have Bran put that three-eyed raven
to work.
Know,
it would be a good
drone,
opportunity for Bran to
yeah,
work
his
a
drone
little bit.
Skills to kind of yeah. You know, send out those three-eyed ravens ahead of time. Come like, hey, here's what's up.
Yeah. Yeah, Euron is waiting for you.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I almost want to like now. I almost want to talk about the fact that like, yeah, we put all this on Daenerys a little bit, but like, she's surrounded by dudes who are terrible at their jobs.
Yeah.
Her advisors are terrible at their jobs. Tyrion and Varys have no business doing these jobs.
They're not. Well, Varys is, you know, he's turning into a bit of a Gary, isn't he?
He's asking the electability question.
Right. He's asking, like, is she likable enough?
It's true.
Yeah.
But
I mean,
what
she's
about
a woman.
What about Jon Snow?
We now have a Joe Biden.
Yeah. Yeah, we do. We've got Joe here. We've got Jon looking like a Snow. I mean, he's officially blah, blah, blah.
And he's electable. Because, you know, he could unite North and South.
Yep.
And he's so cute.
Yeah.
Yep.
So tiny and cute.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Open change.
Everybody likes Jon Snow.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Dany's just too shrill.
And the thing is, too, I think that Dany's whole power trip is hard to watch where it feels... I think that Varys was right in the concept of, like, her saying she deserves it just purely because she was born into this role doesn't necessarily mean she deserves it. But what I don't get is if her and Jon ride together, wouldn't she still be queen?
Well, that's the whole thing, is she's saying that she doesn't want to share power.
Right.
And that's been pretty well telegraphed, which, you know, is her right. However, as a woman in this world, you know, if they're going to look at, I think the thing that if you remove, in an ideal world, if you remove sexism from the whole thing, what you have in the Jon Snow and Daenerys Targaryen pairing is the question of, do you have a ruler? And you go with the person who is a good organizer, because that's really what John's a great organizer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He just doesn't want to rule.
Yeah.
And that's a lot of organizers kind of say, like, I just want to get this thing done.
Yeah.
Once we get it done, I just want to. And then you have a conqueror. So she learned how to conquer. And that was really apparent in the books, by the way. The whole lesson of Daenerys and where they left it is you can be great at conquering. Rulership is an entirely different deal. And where the books left it was she was learning that lesson. And I think that's one of those things that hasn't really been made apparent in the series. And I think it's also important, since we're talking about Dany,
yeah,
and we're going to get into this in terms of female characters, it's these moments when it becomes really, really apparent that, like, you know, having some female writers in the room might be a good idea.
Yeah.
Okay.
Especially since one of them who wrote an episode wrote for Buffy.
She's good.
Man.
So, I mean, come on now.
I mean, now is a good moment to mention that I think in the history of this show, the entire history of Game of Thrones, and correct me if I'm wrong here, Melanie, but only two women have been given credit for writing, given a partial or full writing credit on yes. any episode. The entire, your
My eyes are huge.
Eula.
I can't understand that. Like, I just understand the concept of having so many women actors and not thinking that you need to consult with one person of that demographic. I feel like this season started off and I was shocked by how many women there still were
yeah.
in such strong positions of power. To be like, oh man, so there's women knights, there's women lady lords, there's women kick-ass on their own girls. There's
lady people, assassins.
Yeah, there's assassins and conquerors. There's little girls out here fighting these wars. So it's shocking to hear that they have that many strong women characters and no woman yeah. voicing them.
I know. Right. I want to do the public radio thing and ask a neutral question. Melanie, do you think the lack of women writers on Game of Thrones has affected the story arc?
Oh, dear Lord, yes. I think Game of Thrones really, there was this entire meme going around, I think it was like maybe last year or even in the past couple of years, that said, describe a way that a man writes a woman in fiction. And I think it's like, so-and-so got up and her breasts shone in the moonlight. She got upstairs, she got down the stairs and titted around boobily, you know? And actually, if you look in the books, there's a scene that actually somebody brought up and they said it's probably came out of this, where they described Daenerys getting ready for meeting that slaver in Astapor that she actually ended up sacking the city. That great scene. And actually, mm-hmm. that's coming back to Missandei. That's what Jacaerys was about.
Yes.
That was where she was like, this is where your power is.
Mm-hmm. Oof.
This is where your power is. And in the books, it describes like, well, if they're going to treat her like a savage, she's going to dress like a savage. This is Dany saying this to herself. So she puts on this Dothraki outfit. And as she gets up, he describes the feeling of her boobs swishing against the grassy cloth.
Gosh.
I know every moment I take that when I get up, like, wake up in the morning. Where's my boobs?
I know. What do they feel like against this
feeling?
Fabric?
Am I going to go for a sports bra feel today?
Whatever.
But I mean, but so getting back to your original question,
yes.
I don't, the obviousness of that really, you know, really shone through in those seasons where sex position was everything, where even when Sansa was being assaulted mm-hmm. by Ramsay Bolton, right. it wasn't about her. It was about Theon's shock.
Right.
You know, when there was a horror in what happened in Craster's Keep, you focused in on the male characters and everything going on around them. So it's all about, you know, they're being horrible. It's not about the women suffering.
Mm-hmm.
That's what happens when you have a room that's mainly about dudes. Though then they get called on it. And so then there's that fallback. I think that there are this whole idea of, like, in order to be strong, you also have to have some sort of, you have to have a reason to be there in front of men. And sometimes, you know, it's this exchange of, like, if you're going to have physical power, you have to buy that physical power either by having some sort of emotional deficit or being in a position where you are essentially kind of appealing to the people who would be able to give you agency
yes.
in some way.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
You're making yourself palatable, desirable to them in
right.
order to get what you need.
To get
right,
close
exactly.
enough to murder them. That's what I hope the end result would be, right? I mean, that's what our goal is.
That feels like a really good segue to talk about Arya.
Mm-hmm. Who knows
right.
how to get close enough to murder him.
Yes.
Hell yeah.
Yes.
Sansa's, Arya is amazing.
Yes.
She's just the coolest character to watch. And for her, it's interesting because even that, I think, would require a woman to think about the dynamics of letting go of ladiness, letting go of what you're supposed to be doing with your life and following the path that you know to be yours.
Yes. even if it is a path that shows that you're kind of a psycho.
Mm-hmm.
Like, right.
But I loved
you were a mass murderer person.
But I loved how Arya, like, you know, just would not play the game of like being some wife. I love how they're going back to the concept of like, I don't want to be nobody's wife. I don't want to be nobody's lady. I'm out here being me. And I don't know how you don't get that yet. But also even just because of the way she had sex with him. I'm thinking of the...
Oh, with Gendry?
Yeah. Gendry. It just, you know, even for you to think that I would be a lady when meanwhile I literally, I bagged you.
Especially since he would diminish her.
Yeah.
When they were along the road, when they were, as you know, basically children together, although he was never a child. He knew that the way that that would just drive her, the thing that would drive her nuts was when he'd say, okay, m'lady.
Yeah.
She goes, I'm not your lady, you know, yeah. So just that, it's like, m'lady, m'lady. It's like, okay, and now you've stabbed the Night King in the gut.
Right. You should be my wife.
Surely now you can just let it all go, relax, and be m'lady. It's like, no.
Oh my yeah. God. This is making me think of, do you remember this? I can't remember. It was like, there was a woman, she won, like, she medaled in the Olympics or something, and her boyfriend came running out on the field and proposed
I
to her.
I do remember this.
That's what this makes me think of. Like, she just killed the Night King.
Yeah.
And you're like, marry me and come up to this, like, backwater-ass castle that I have now. No. Like, oh my God. He made it all about him.
All about him.
Oh.
But also to think that you couldn't have been down with her in the first place. I mean, to be so pompous to think that now that you have this title, Arya's going to get down with you. Meanwhile, she liked you when you were you, even when you were less than you.
Mm.
You know, before you even knew that you were the son of a king.
Yeah.
Who shouldn't have been king.
That was the only moment in all of episode 4 that I was like, happy, that I was like, yes,
yeah,
was when Arya said no to Gendry. Yeah. That was it.
Yes,
that was it.
Yeah,
yeah. I did love when she got back on the road with that reminded me of a 70s like,
oh, you know,
Burt Reynolds.
<I know>.
Yeah.
With her and those Burt Reynolds characters, like, well, that's all done.
Mm-hmm. Have you guys heard of the rapper Megan Thee Stallion?
Uh-uh.
Oh, she's my new favorite, like, beyond the world. But she has this very sexual line in one of her songs where she goes, suck it, then look in his eyes, then the next day I might lead him on red. You know, the idea is that, like, I can have sex with you and literally the very next day you can text me and it just says the text has been read. Right? And no one's responding to you. And that's exactly what Arya did to Gendry. Gendry's like, I loved last night. I had such a good time. Should we get married? And she's like, I saw your message. Yeah, I saw it. I saw it.
And then she went in on like a buddy film. She yeah. took off on like a buddy comedy.
With and the still, dude who was like, are yeah. you going to leave me to die again? Probably.
Yeah. Oh. Keeping it real.
Keeping
listen,
it real.
Bro, you were there when my dad died. You were there when he died. So pretty much you're still on my list. The last time I left you to die, I left you to die.
Oh, the whole Sansa exchange with the Hound.
Okay. Ugh. Okay.
My first thought about Sansa is how it opens with Sansa caring so much about the young man who saved Bren, but really just got stabbed very quickly by the Theon.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
I get
Season
why
8
Sansa
opens with like that really sort of lovely reunion between her
yeah.
and Theon.
But I get the concept of like everyone's dead and we're mourning and Sansa would mourn Theon. But at the same time, a part of me thinks like she should be over Theon by now. You
why?
Know what I mean? Because for me, I'm rewatching and starting at the beginning too. So I'm just
oh,
like,
Theon was kind of garbage.
Well, I'm in that garbage. Well, but also he was garbage before he, you know, attacked everybody.
Yeah.
I feel like his personality was like the most sexist character we could have experienced in an everyday conversation, you know, like
she was kind of garbage too though.
Sure. It should be like he's dead. Maybe Bryn should be looking at him. Like mm-hmm. I could see that more than something.
Bryn's not looking at anything now.
Oh my God.
Bryn doesn't care about it.
Bryn's
damn
just
thing.
Looking at the sky.
For real. Bryn's yeah. like, listen, yeah. I'm in the past.
Yeah.
So ooh. Whatever you're doing right now, I don't now. Even care.
Yeah. So, okay, so, all right, so we know Sansa was garbage kind of initially. She was not a great person. She just reminded me of, like, she was, like, the meanest of mean girls,
oh,
right?
Oh, God, she sold out her own sister.
Okay,
yeah.
So that's
I don't see
like,
her that way.
But, oh, I mean, she sold out her sister. And
she
like,
was
had
doing her
she...
duty, blah, blah, blah.
Well,
no.
Internalized misogyny.
Dude. I no, guess. No. But then, so what was the, I mean, no. like, was it, like, internalized misogyny, like, towards herself that made her sit down with the Hound and be like, if I hadn't gone through all of this awful, traumatic, terrible, assaultive stuff, I wouldn't be who I am today.
No, that's a bad writer. That is that is two men who believe that all progress is from scars.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Because
that is what that is. Because, I mean, that's a very, I mean, I'm not just saying that as like because she's a female character. I think that's kind of a very kind of masculine way of looking at the world. We're the sum of our scars. We're everything we survive. Like, yeah. that does not destroy us, makes us stronger.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And this is a character who they have just thrown every method of destruction at. And unfortunately, most of them involve abuse,
yeah.
physical abuse, you know, sexualized shames, and straight up rape.
Yeah.
And yeah. then here's a person. So that's the way we look at her. And after all of that, her sitting down with the hound, and it's not just the fact that she says that, mm-hmm. which is bad enough. Mm-hmm. It's the fact that she says it after he says to the woman who is in charge of Winterfell, oh, yeah, I heard that you got broken in rough.
Oh, my God.
And even if you're a kind of person who is like, you know, that's just Uncle's hound.
I know.
Mm-hmm.
He's an unhappy man.
I know. Oh,
got burned as a baby.
Just had too much to drink again.
Like the Idina Menzel, like flurry of slaps in that moment.
But it was a real lesson for him, though, too, in that moment of like, you got to get over the trauma that you've been carrying with you for so long.
Yeah.
Because he's just still so mad at his brother for like throwing him in the fire and like mad at everybody else for like noticing that he has scars on his face.
Hey, but don't take it out on me by announcing like, I know you were raped.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And get a proper
coworker. What would have been amazing symmetry in that moment is if she said, hold on for a second, called over Brienne, and then had Brienne slap him because she's like, as a lady, I was taught not to slap. Because remember when that happened?
Yes.
And he very, you know, he was being a gentleman and handed her a handkerchief and said, yeah. you'll be needing that.
Mm.
Although he didn't do the slapping. He didn't do anything about it either.
Right. Oh. You watched me look at my dad's head on a pike. Like, all that stuff. We're just not cool, bro. There are some things we just can't come back from. The murder of my dad is the main thing. I just can't get over that.
I hope that in a few years, somebody, like, gets on the internet and does a feminist reimagining where they have those moments where it's like, we're just going to correct these moments.
Yeah.
Yes. I would love that so much. Yes.
Somebody out there in the interwebs, get on it.
Ugh.
My ideal is it's just post-battle. Right. And everybody like goes to their respective beds. And then Sansa just walks around and slits throats in the night. Wrap it up. Done, done, and done. So
even better, she'd be like, it's a self-care day.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah.
It's a self-care day. That's right. Yeah. I love it so much.
Sends out some masks after the mass funeral.
Yeah. Oh, that's so good. OK, so we have yet to talk about Ser Brienne. Right? So we are totally going to do that after the break. So I said we're going to talk about Brienne, and we are going to talk about Brienne. But first, when we first started talking, Melanie, you brought up Cersei Lannister.
HBIC.
And, yes, as like the product of the worst kind of patriarchy, right? So honestly, as we were thinking about talking with you, I remembered your describing a boss that you had in the past and how it was cathartic for you to watch.
Please let her
to watch Aliens after having to work with her every day because of the way she sort of hung you out to dry on the regular. Mm-hmm. I mean, is Cersei Lannister just the worst kind of female boss ever, or is she just a terrible person? Like, I don't. Can we or can we not like bring gender into this? It's hard for me to know.
And here's why. And I'm actually going to kind of, if we can, do a 2-for-1 in this assessment.
Oh, we can.
I think that both she, this is what she and Dany have in common besides a burning desire for the Iron Throne for very different reasons. Both of them were taught about power by men.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm.
Going back to that moment when Cersei sits down with Tywin, Tywin says to her, and this is only half true. So first she sits down and says, you keep on having these councils about leadership with my brothers. Did you ever stop to think that the person who listened to all of your lessons about history of the realm, of the family, and power and politics, did you ever stop to think that the person who listened most closely to it was your daughter? And he just doesn't even break stride. He kind of brings up a couple of questions, you know, questions and answers with her. And then he says, it's not that I don't trust you because you're a woman. I don't trust you because you're not as smart as you think you are.
Wow.
And from that moment on, I feel like everything she's done after that has been in reaction to that statement, both proving it right and proving it wrong. And I think he was only being half honest with her. Of course he disrespected her because she's a woman.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Everything that he looked at, and this is not uncommon in that time, of course, was women are here to give us, to produce heirs.
Right.
And women are not suited to, you know, to care for the realm. When he and Olenna Tyrell, who is really the strongest woman in this series, when they would spar, it would be all the threats were about he would say things to her, like thinking she'd be like, oh, no, not my grandsons. Oh, like she'll protect her grandson. She's like, no, I don't care about my grandsons. Of course. Yes, of course they're gay. And of course I know that's I don't care. Let's talk about your son and daughter who are sleeping together. Oh, I know that, too.
Yeah.
Mutual assured destruction, my friend.
Yeah.
And, you know, he would basically just kind of sit there and go into a stalemate. Of course, eventually, you know, after he was gone, Olenna Tyrell got knocked off too, but that was very telling in that he sat there with another female ruler and immediately went to, I'm going to spoil your legacy mode, as opposed to any kind of aggressive, my ships are better than your ships. It was much more like, you cannot protect your children. I know you care about your children. And what he didn't realize was, oh no, I only care about my ladies.
Yeah.
My sons, I know they're inheriting everything and they're stupid.
They're fine.
I don't care. They're Say fine. What you will about them. They're fine.
That, okay. I feel like there's a parallel there a little bit between Tywin threatening Olenna Tyrell's grandchildren and what Tyrion said to Cersei at the gates of the city, right? He said, I know you're not a monster. I know you care about your child. Like, so are we looking at another situation where we have a dude who is assuming that the driving force behind every woman is their love of their children and their willingness to protect them at all costs? Or are we looking at another situation where it's a writer's room who are like, women care about their babies. Let's go there.
I think that there's a lot of problems with Tyrion not learning from, you know, there could be a number of ways to interpret that. I think that Tyrion's main crime, this is also kind of bewildering, is that he has not learned that, and I say this as someone who has an awful, terrible, evil sibling. After a point, you learn that they're not coming back from that.
For real.
You just learn that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So when I saw it, it's like, no, honey, no.
Yeah. As my therapist would say, you can divorce your family. Right. Yeah. My therapist was like, you can divorce your family for sure.
Right.
And he just looks stupid. I mean, that's the thing that was hard to watch. It was hard to watch him really grovel for something that anyone who was thinking beyond your relationships of blood would be like, bruh, don't go over there. She's going to say no. I'm going to go ask her real quick. Don't do it. It's going to be so awkward.
And
you might get Missandei's blood on you. Yeah.
And it's going to make him look worse.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because there was no way that, you know, Cersei was going to accept that deal.
No.
There was no way.
And you don't even look like the hand. You don't look like the hand of Dany when you're going to have a conversation with your sister.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you look like you're now, like, in the Lannister camp trying to work through Lannister problem.
He's basically the equivalent, going back to another franchise, the guy in Die Hard, the original one, who was like, Hans, booby.
Oh, my God.
And what happened to that guy?
Yeah.
He shot him in the face.
Yeah.
Things didn't go well for him.
No, things didn't go well. I'm amazed. So, but bring it back to, like, yes, there's that. But I also think that there's this whole idea of taking it back to Cersei and Dany, that these are characters who learned about leadership through men, and they specifically learned about leadership through ruthless men.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm not saying that, you know, women can't be ruthless and don't, you know, can lead and be like, it's a happy, happy world. And everything. That's not the kind of world this is. That's not the kind of world we live in.
Mm-hmm.
But you have, you have someone who is vying for the throne who learned about leadership through the internal power structure of the Dothraki, which basically respects nothing but being crushed, surviving.
But brute force.
Brute force. So she learned brute force. That's how she learned initially. Then she learned deception. You know, through going and saying like, oh, so here's this guy who's going to help me. And, oh, actually, he just has a gigantic empty safe.
Yeah.
Oh, and that's what she says. Thank you. I learned much here.
Mm-hmm.
So she learned how to be brutal and deceptive.
Yep.
And that's how she got her dragons. That's how she got her, you know, that's how she got her the forces of Unsullied. She did it through brute force with her dragons, you know, and through deception.
Yeah.
She knew something that no one else did. And that has carried her through until this point.
Man.
Because that's one thing that we saw in that last episode. I mean, and part of it was petulance, was just like, nobody loves me as much as Jon Snow. It's like, maybe if you took that Starbucks cup, got some more Starbucks for everybody in the room, and talk to them about what coffees they like.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe they would like you a lot more.
Was the problem that Dani didn't do office housework and didn't offer to get everybody else coffee?
Because
she didn't do anything.
Yeah. No, she didn't do anything.
She just sat there on some, like, you know, you all should be grateful for me, and I don't know how to get down with your culture, so I'm too good for all of you. That's what it looked like.
She's like, I brought my dragons.
Yeah.
What more do you want?
I want Arya to come to drink with me.
That's true.
She did bring dragons.
She did bring dragons.
Yeah.
But you can maybe go and you're going into another lady's house and basically, like, maybe, you know, when the other lady says, like, hey, could you let us be independent? It's like, you don't even have the throne yet.
Yeah.
Maybe you should just say yes.
Yeah.
Also, why would you want the North, girl? Like, I don't, like, in that moment I thought, Dani, you don't even like the North. Like, your dragons don't like the North. You don't want to come up here for, like, reunions. Or dinners. Like, you don't like John's people that much. Just go south and, like, live down there.
I know, live.
Well, I mean, now that I have heard, like, what Melanie had to say about how Dany learned to consolidate power, like, brute force and deception, it actually makes sense. Like, why in the world would you compromise?
Yeah.
Even in that moment, right? Because that, perhaps, that looks like weakness, you know, for Dany. I mean, you know, but...
And Tywin Lannister is basically brute force and opportunism.
Yep.
And that's, you know, deception is part of that, but really it was opportunism. Because even in the story of how the Mad King was deposed, his whole guarantee was, oh, I'll make safe the city. And so when they let him in, he sacked it.
Yes.
So his whole thing was like, whoever's going to come out on top, I'm going to make sure that I have all the gold in my purse.
Yeah.
And then when I come in, I can be like, look, I made the city safe.
Mm.
So he's brute force and opportunism. And that's what Cersei learned.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I have one more question about Dany before we move on to Brienne of Tarth.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So.
Sir.
Yeah.
Good sir.
I'm so sorry. Before, I'm not, I should not Sir Brienne of Tarth. Like, she earned that shit.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. So, because Dany learned what power looks like through men, does that mean that she's never going to unlearn listening to crappy male advisors? I feel like it's the mistake she keeps making, right? Like, I can't blame her for all of the things that have gone wrong because, you know, this has been like a team effort in a lot of ways, but like, she needs to stop listening to her crappy male advisors. She needs to stop listening to, like, fake woke Varys, who's like, I'm here for the realm. Oh my God, Varys, I'm so over him. But, like, you know, she needs to stop listening to these guys.
Yeah.
I don't know, like, is that just the thing she's incapable of doing?
In a perfect world, I would love to have in the next episode it opening with her sitting down with Sansa, who, by the way, is the best strategist.
She's been right about everything.
She's been right about everything. She was right about the Battle of the Bastards. Nobody listened to her.
Oh.
She was right about you need to rest up. Nobody listened to her. In a perfect world, I would love for Daenerys to sit down with Sansa and be like, you know, girl, I'm sorry.
Yep.
Yeah.
Be my hand.
What do you think that we should do?
Oh.
You know, my best friend just got knocked off, you know, sit down, you know, they can put on the mud mask, maybe do a whole, like, Korean 10-step skincare together, and then just be like, all right.
They're the only women in the building.
They're the only women there.
I mean, literally, Brienne is there, but literally, like, that one little girl's gone.
Brienne is off eating her Ben and Jerry's, like, blubbering in it, apparently, but we'll get to that.
Man.
But just sit down and say, like, I have been wrong about this, and I've been thinking about it. I heard about nobody listened to you about all the bastards, and you had to save the day, but nobody gives you credit for that, but I heard about it.
Yeah.
What would you do?
Yep.
Yeah.
And then do what Sansa does.
That would be amazing.
That's Wouldn't a that great idea. No, it really is.
But there's no female writers in the room.
Yeah.
So that's not going to happen.
Son of a bitch.
But are they turning Daenerys into somebody that we don't like so that she loses and Jon wins and we're all comfortable with it?
We are going to talk about predictions.
Ooh, okay.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. We're going to get there.
Okay.
But I feel like, I don't know why I'm the self-appointed trains running on time person for this.
Because you like trains. in order.
I do. Mm-hmm. I do love trains, and I do love telling people what to do. So,
so
I know. No, I'm the worst. I know.
If you're a man, you'd be a hero and efficient.
I know. That's the thing. But I'm really aggressive, and I'm kind of bitchy.
Oh, God.
And she's lying about both of those things. She's aggressive. She's aggressive when there needs to be work done. So she, like, shows herself doing the job.
You mean like a boss?
Yeah. I would call it that.
Boss.
Oh, I'm into that. Okay. So I'm the boss here.
Yeah.
So we need to talk about Sir Brienne.
My girl.
Okay.
The love of my life.
Okay. Yes.
So my one of the first things I want to think about with Brienne is there's no way she would be, like, the last time we would see her would be her crying without even holding herself. Like, her arms are dead and her cloak is heavier than the night. And just bawling to herself in the winter cold without all of the gear that she constantly has on. Brienne barely takes off a cape.
Oh.
Let alone all this armor to just stand in the snow and watch a one-handed, not his dominant hand, dude in his late 40s, early 50s, hop on a horse and ride back to get down with his own sister.
Or maybe murder her. We don't know.
Yeah. Doesn't matter. What he told me was he was going back to have sex with his sister. There's no part of me that would be like, I can't believe that this has happened. No. Listen, that was a weird fluke that happened the last couple of days. I don't want anybody to know that happened. I definitely had sex with a dude who has, like, a bunch of incest children and one hand and barely acknowledged me as a human being till, like, a couple of days ago when he thought the world was coming to an end and his sister was gonna die.
Yes.
So fuck him. Just what she should have been saying.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't picture Lady Brienne and all of her understanding of
Sir Brienne.
Sorry, thank you. I cannot picture Sir Brienne and all of her understanding of power.
Yep.
And how you're perceived as woman, putting all that down. And because the first thing I think of, too, is, like, for Jaime to save you from being raped and for you to have never had sex at this age means that you were always good at guarding your body from terrible men.
Yep.
Like,
you were, because everybody's been getting raped since the beginning of time. So you were like, haha, not today. Constantly.
And particularly after there's that scene where she cuts down the three barmaids that the Stark men said that they tortured and hung.
Yeah.
And she takes them out without breaking a sweat.
Right. Mm. Right. So I'm used to doing this all the time, but now I got something that I wanted and I'm just so overwhelmed. Also, the thing for me is I watched the little specials afterwards and I can't even figure out when Brienne fell in love with Jaime.
I know.
You know, so you've seen the whole thing, right?
I've seen the whole thing, but yeah. I know that she had... She appreciated him and she looked up to him for all of his glory and all that kind of stuff and thanked him for. But I don't remember this underlying, like, I love him.
The thing that I loved about their relationship was that you could tell that it wasn't just that she loved him. He loved her. There was that whole scene when they were, was it at River Run, during the siege of River Run, where she goes in and they have a conversation and it's straight up negotiation.
Mm.
And there's a point where she says, it could very well be that tomorrow we're on opposite sides.
Yep.
And he says, and it's not what they're saying. That's when Gwendolyn Christie and Nicholas Coster-Waldo.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, sir, if I offended you by butchering your name. But when those two actors, like, they say so much in their muted expressions.
That's true.
And that's where the love comes in, you know, and I think that's, so it wasn't unbelievable that they got together.
Yeah.
I think what was not believable was, and this is one of those things that amazingly the people that are commenting on my story don't seem to get, is that this is a woman who has spent her entire life, as you said, protecting herself, protecting her body, but also proving that if you step to me in any fashion, you are taking your life into your hands.
Yes.
Yes.
And I think... And that also goes to emotional. That's one thing that Gwendolyn Christie was really good at doing, was showing on her face, never really showing any emotion. Because even then, that this is a woman who's in a man's world, the first thing that you would be accused of if you take any kind of bruising, any tears come down your face, you'll be accused of being weak. Mm-hmm. Oh, you can't take it.
What kind of sir cries?
Ha ha ha. What kind of sir cries?
I mean, that was the article that you wrote, Melanie.
Yes.
This week, it was about basically, like, we all know what happens when a woman cries in public at work.
Right.
Right? Yeah. Like, there's, right. You even, like, you even dropped There's No Crying in Baseball, for God's sake, as a reference. Like, you're in a male-dominated field. There's no crying in baseball.
There's no crying in baseball. And I think, and there were a couple of people like, well, she was having a private moment. I'm like, no, she was out in a courtyard. And particularly, it's like, I'm not ashamed to say it. I've been broken up with. One of the things that I made sure that I did not do in front of that person was show that I felt any emotions about it.
Absolutely.
Because they were not getting that piece of me.
No. Mm. No.
And I'm not saying that I am Sir Brienne, but what I am saying is that any woman who has been around for long enough and is in any arena, not just work, although being a sir and being a knight is obviously a job, but any arena that's male-dominated, if something like that happens, it's not even like, oh, because the camera's on, it's like, that's an emotional fallback.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's the armor you wear all your life. You never take it off.
Mm-hmm.
And you might say like, okay, I'm going to let the armor relax because I'm around somebody. But essentially, this was a violation of trust. Armor's back up.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that you can even see it in, I think I said this in the story, when Renly died, she took a moment and she was in shock and she was crying. And then basically, Catelyn Stark came around and was like, get your game face on. We have to survive now. And immediately she's like, psh, I can go.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Because that's what she does. Mm-hmm. And I'd also like to point out that when she rejected Tormund, who obviously was love at first sight, he cried, but he didn't lose his shit. There are a couple of things, because guess what? Because they see Tormund as a big, tough guy.
Yeah.
And it's okay that he cried. Yeah. But he also, like being Tormund, he got over it because a barmaid came up and was like, that's okay, and ran off with her.
Mm-hmm.
But a woman who's a warrior has to break down and cry?
Yeah.
There ain't no way. They didn't even cuddle. They weren't even cuddling in bed when he left.
No.
Like, it wasn't like she was laying her head on his chest in some like, oh, I'm so wrapped in his arms. She turned back her way. She was on her side of the bed. You're and
right.
Now she all of a sudden feels so cold.
Right. And I'll say just make one more reference.
Yep.
Who is not a warrior in the world of TV? Like, the least far from a warrior that you can think of. And I guess people would argue with me about this. But
Maggie Simpson.
Maggie Simpson.
Captain Steubing from Love Boat. I don't know
Captain
why he Steubing. Came to my mind.
But I'm bringing up Carrie Bradshaw.
Mm.
Although we could say that she's a warrior, I think she's more of a lover than a fighter.
Yeah. Sure.
When she got broken up
I had
with
to wonder.
By Post-it note, did she sit down and cry? No. She took those carnations and threw them across the room and went on a rampage in the city.
Yeah. That's right.
That's what a lady does.
She went and got high and got arrested.
She sure did.
Yep.
I would love a redo. I would love a redo where Brienne is just fucking shit up. That would have been real.
That would have been great.
Yeah, where she's just kicking every bucket over and and just letting animals loose.
Yep.
Just going to Brienne and the Godswood and be like, can you just have these crows follow him down the road and just poop on him
yes.
the entire time?
Oh my God.
Yes. Yeah.
Yes. Go into what's left of Winterfell's like alcohol stocks.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah. She's like, it is time to drink now.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God.
All of those is more realistic than this bawling.
Right.
Future.
Well, this is the thing. So we know it's not realistic. We know it landed like really, really poorly. So,
except with some dudes who are like, poor innocent Brienne.
For real.
Some of the response I've got, well, Brienne has always been naive in the ways of knightly, honor. I'm like, no, she hasn't.
No.
She has never been naive about it. She has hewed to the determinations and the qualities of knighthood, but I don't think she has as much of a realistic view of knighthood as Sandor Clegane has, which is like, just because you're a knight doesn't mean you're a good person.
Right.
Yeah.
But she's like, I can never be a knight, but I am going to be everything but a knight.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. It doesn't make her naive.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the things that's just so annoying about this is that what I have noticed is that there is this value that's placed on a woman's tears that in order to show vulnerability, you have to cry. But not just cry, you have to lose it because underneath all that armor, there's still a soft little woman in there, right?
No, there's not.
But there, have a soft heart. You can have vulnerability, but that doesn't mean that you have to lose it in public. And that is in public.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean,
in front of somebody who has done you wrong.
Yep.
Like, women don't do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I feel like Brienne would only have a soft moment when she's listening to like Keith Sweat, like under the covers.
Oh, yeah.
Like, way later. Like maybe like a week later.
And
when
just
she, like
even
gets
in
happened.
TV, like in most of TV, when Olivia Pope had her heart broken. You didn't see her lose it in public. Mm-hmm. She went back to her house, got her red wine and popcorn, yes. and just stared off like, ain't that no shit. I mean, that's because
yes.
that's what shit. Powerful women do who get things done.
She's got to go north and rebound, man.
That's right.
There's all these wildlings that would be so into her.
I know. Mm-hmm. Tormund would be okay with her showing up.
Go true north, girl.
Okay. Yeah. We're going to talk about the Garys, but first, like, who are the best allies on this show? Like, who are the strongest allies for the women characters on this show? I feel like Tormund definitely gets one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because he was the one who said that Brienne should be knighted in the first place.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know that he necessarily was...
Yeah,
I think
no,
that was
I know.
A double entendre. But yes, I think that he absolutely... But that's the whole thing. Like, the free folk, they're all seen as wild savages, but they're entirely egalitarian.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Yeah.
In a beautiful way.
You're right. Why are we rooting for anybody in Westeros? Like, we should basically be rooting for the free folk to, like, get their shit together and then come back and take the Iron Throne.
But they're just too free. They don't have no storylines. It's like they do what our ancestors did. They wake up, they eat something, they fuck, they go back to sleep.
Although I will say something, and maybe this is an edge case and I don't know that it'll make it in there and into this, but I will say I had a problem at Hardhome where the female leader there, she got her kids on the boat, they were out, and she was fighting. She was fighting those whites. She was doing great. Then all of a sudden he turned around and saw some kitty whites, and all of a sudden just like, no, and just shrinks.
Oh.
Male riders. And I sat there with my husband, and I was like, oh, see, that bothers me. And he was like, but why? I mean, she looked at him and saw her kids. I'm like, I don't have to look at other people's kids and see my kids.
No.
Nuh-uh.
You know, and I'm pretty sure other people don't. Like, if my kids are gone and I know those kids, those kids were obviously dead. One of them was walking on a bone. Like, no, those are not children anymore.
My kids don't have blue eyes.
No.
No. No. I don't fuck them.
And they have meat on their legs.
Why would I? Why in any time in the middle of any battle or any challenge in this world, you know, would I be deterred by my mission? Like, everybody would be Jon Snow out here going, like, they're coming. Winter's coming. Get it together. There's no time where you'd be like, I just got to stop and think about winter.
Yeah. Will I be able to get enough ice cream?
And because there's so many more men that would do that pause in women.
Right.
There's so many more men that would say, I don't know if I can handle this. You know, it just it went from an easy life to a hard life. And that transition is tough.
Mm-hmm.
Where women are literally like, it's been hard all along.
Right.
Yeah.
It's been hard since the day
Why
I got
Why do you
here.
Think I've been putting grain away?
Yes.
Oh my God, all this time.
To make some beer.
Yeah.
To replace it.
I know. The infinitely practical, always right Sansa. Like, how am I going to feed all these people and these dragons that you brought to fight this battle?
Oh, the whites will get rid of half of those folks for you.
Sansa is the VP who they'd be like, brutally. Serve the cake. She is.
Mm-hmm.
That's what
God.
She is. She is like the executive VP who is like, it's so-and-so's birthday. Here, you cut the cake. No.
Oh, that's amazing.
Ugh,
okay. So we're trying to figure out if there are any decent allies in this show. Like, Tormund feels like he gets something for...
My when you said that, my first thought was like, other women? I was like, I pictured Theon's sister.
Yara.
I pictured Yara being like an ally that's like still out there, like ready to help out.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. And I want to say Arya too, actually, because she was the one who told Jon Snow, she's like, Sansa's the smartest one here.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
No, Arya is totally the best ally on the show.
You know.
I think Jon's an ally. I mean, Jon has I think Jon's direct mission has always been good. And I think that even now he's trying to stand true to his word.
I think Jon's a dummy who's gotten by on the fact that people like him.
Yeah.
He's very cute.
He's the kind of ally who'd be like, I believe in you. Like, but you have a big sword.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why don't you step up? But I believe in you.
Yep.
I don't even believe in myself, but I believe in you. That's exactly what he's saying to Danny.
Exactly.
I don't believe in me. I believe in you. It's like, well, if you believe in me, then believe me when I say you need to keep this secret. But I also believe in my sisters, and I believe in them, and they'll believe in you, and you believe in me.
No. Yeah. Yep. That's exactly right. Yes. He is the kind of ally who would say something really nice to your face and then not do anything to help you.
The worst.
Yeah. That's totally right. Ugh. Yeah. Okay. So then.
And Cersei has lots of allies. Like, I feel like the people, like Cersei's hand and the way that...
The way
that he understands that she's willing to do terrible things, but and he's willing to support her in that. I mean, he's really good for her.
Yeah.
True allyship there.
Yeah.
Yeah, because she supports his science.
Yeah.
That's right.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
What do you think about it? I mean, because that's how we first met him. It's like, the reason I don't have a maester chain is because I do odd things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And but, I mean, he's, you know, he healed people. Like, what he said is right. Like, he's so good, he brought people back from the dead.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, so, like, God. Yeah.
Okay. So we talked about allies. We already know Tywin Lannister's a total Gary.
Yeah.
Olenna was definitely an ally.
Oh, okay.
And particularly one of the things I loved is that when she met Brienne, she was the only one. She was like, "You are magnificent. Mm-hmm. Everything about you is magnificent. I heard that you knocked down my silly grandson, Loras. Good for you. You keep going."
Yeah.
Like, she was not like, "Ugh, look at," I mean, she had a sharp tongue for everybody, but she saw Brienne and she was like, "You are magnificent."
Oh, I love that so much.
And that's probably one of the few people in that world who has ever said that to her.
Mm-hmm. That's so good.
It's interesting how many women are supporting women on the show. When, you know, we all think that, like, you know, women are cutthroat too in so many ways. But when these dudes write the women, they're like, women are just, they get along and they support each other at all.
Yeah, except for the Sansa and Dany thing.
Yeah.
Because Dany, I think, only wants to be friends with Sansa. And if Sansa's like, "Okay, I'm going to bend the knee."
Yeah. That's the only way that friendship.
Yeah.
That's the only way.
Scare quotes friendship happens.
Those are the only friends Dany has, period, though.
Yes.
Like, Dany makes friends like Trump.
Except for Missandei. Yeah.
She wanted her to ride with her or not. Like, I mean, if she would have rode with her, she wouldn't have been friends with her.
Yeah,
she's on a lonely mission.
Yeah, I wonder if they would have been that friendly if Missandei was like, "You know what? I've been in the North a little bit. I think I'm going back to Nott."
Yeah.
That's a really good point. If she'd been like, "These jerks keep staring at me. Like, they're literal zombies coming.
It's a little racist.
Jerks are looking
north.
At me like this.
It's like, can I just borrow Rhaegal for like 2 minutes?
I just need to get the
fuck." You know?
Yeah.
She would have been pissed.
In that world, it's like a bullet train. Like,
right?
Be back in 50 minutes.
I know. Drop They'll come back. Mm-hmm. It's fine. Okay. So we know Tywin Lannister is a Gary.
Ugh.
Who are the other two? We move on to award two more Garys here.
Do they have to be alive? Because there's a lot of Garys.
I mean, like, if we wanted to make a long list, we could also talk about people who are deceased. I guess currently, given who's left. Although Tywin's dead.
Yeah, Tywin's dead. He's way dead.
All right, let's just open the floodgates then. Two Garys, all characters alive and dead.
Oof.
Yep.
Two Garys each or total?
Total.
Ugh.
Two more. We're going to be in here for another hour if we try and, like, name them all. Yep.
I mean,
and
bastard.
And do me a favor and just for the folks at home who might be joining in and me, can you redefine the Gary?
Oh, yeah. So Gary is your coworker who cuts you off, takes credit for your ideas, says, you know, kind of sexist, kind of shitty things. Yeah. Right. But, you know, it's only a joke. What are you worried about? You know?
Oh, my God. Sandor Clegane is definitely a Gary.
Okay. Yes. Oh, my God, yes.
And the thing is, he's the worst kind of Gary because he is also an ally.
Yep.
He thinks he's an ally.
Yep.
But he's a total Gary.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
But then who was I thinking? My first thought. Oh, I was going to say the bastard for sure. Like, the way that he, you know, was so abusive of his power.
Ramsay
Bolton. Yeah, which is power. And just anti-women. Yeah. But also, you know, wanted them in the fold of his life.
Gary.
I'd say he's a Chad.
Mm. Ooh, yes. Oh, my God.
Mm, another Gary.
So glad that guy's dead.
Man, eaten by his dogs.
I know.
Would Varys
Sansa,
be a Gary?
Again? I mean, I think Varys is kind of a Gary.
Mm.
I think Varys is the kind of Gary who thinks he's kind of woke, because, like, his whole thing
God,
in this last episode of, like, but it's about the realm and it's about the people and blah blah blah. This guy has been at court for decades. What does he know of the people?
Right.
This dude has been in the Red Keep since, like, I don't even know when. Get out of here with your, like, common people nonsense. He doesn't know anything.
No.
Oh, God. That's what I meant when I said I was over him. Ugh. He's the worst. Okay.
Let's see.
All right. So we've got Varys. We've got the Hound. And then we've got...
Oh, Euron. Euron Greyjoy.
Euron Greyjoy is a total fucking Gary.
Yeah. Because he doesn't care about... He has no... Yeah. He does not care. So, and this is, if we're going to go... Well, we'll go into predictions in a minute.
Yes.
But I think that the fact that he's a Gary is, like, part of what's going to be Cersei's downfall.
Because
I think Cersei thinks that she's got that Gary under control with her, you know, with her magic thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that...
And the baby lie.
And the baby lie.
Yeah.
But I think that what will be interesting is that if Euron is enough of a Gary that... You know, he gets the news like, this isn't your child, it's mine. And Euron's just like, I don't care.
Yeah.
It's half royal. So I don't care. If we're last man standing, if I'm the last man standing in this fight and I got two hands, you better believe that kid's going to be mine.
Yep. Mm.
That's really... a straight up Gary.
Yeah.
Taking credit not just for your ideas,
yeah,
but for your
baby.
Product.
That's good.
Got there afterwards. Bought the rights.
Mm. And that's a good predict. That's an interesting prediction that he might be part of her downfall. Okay. What else? What other predictions do we have for the end of this series?
I have a very hopeful one. We'll see.
One thing I keep thinking about in terms of predictions is how the camera works during the intro now, and how it comes down this like tower when you get to King's Landing. Mm-hmm. And I keep thinking that someone's gonna like come down and sneak in that way because we've never been up some weird random tower that
maybe an assassin.
Yeah, ooh. Maybe like by the name of like an Arya, yeah. Or like a. And then I like the idea too of, you know, maybe Jaime's coming back to finish off his sister. What I don't understand about the idea of like the love between the two of them and the hope for another child is that they had they're aware that having children together could result in like another Joffrey, like that crazy of a person, like that dismantlement of like of sanity.
I don't really think that Cersei thought there was that much of a problem with Joffrey.
Yeah,
no. I don't really think that that's like an impediment. Mm. Yeah, we all. I mean, yeah, I don't think
because she also got a sweet Tommen who just loved kittens like Sir Pounce.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, she's crossing her fingers.
Okay, all right. So what's I have a hopeful prediction and then a prediction that makes me feel really bad. So the prediction that makes me feel hopeful is that the final scene will be Arya standing in front of the Iron Throne because she's the only goddamn one left.
Yeah,
trying to decide if she's going to sit on it or not.
Mm.
Mm.
That's my hopeful prediction. The prediction that makes me feel bad, that I am more convinced than ever will happen now that you've described the whole writer's issue and how they've written women, is that Jaime will go back to Brienne and she will take him back.
No, no, Brienne, don't do it.
That's it.
Don't do it.
Yep.
I don't think Jaime's going to make it.
I'm fine with that.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to make it.
Yeah, so, I'm fine with a bunch of people dying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I am too.
And I think that, and I honestly think, you know, so remember, Melisandre told Varys that he was going to die.
Oh, I know. I've been holding on to that.
So I think what's going to happen is that at the last minute, when Dany's like, I've spared your life a bunch of times before and you've basically proven me wrong. Why should I spare it now? He's going to throw Varys under the bus. I think that's going
to. Oh, Tyrion's going to?
Oh, yeah.
I hope so.
I think so.
Yeah.
And I think that somehow it's going to maybe all end in tears in that regard. In terms of who's in front of the Iron Throne, I think that would be great.
It's not going to happen, but I would love it.
But I would, you know, I think that it's going to be one of those things where maybe it'll look like Jon Snow, because in a lot of ways, you know, people have said that he and Dany are the Song of Fire, Ice and Fire, but really he himself is the song. Mm. But I think that George R. R. Martin in general is, you know, really loves misdirects. So I would love to see that after all of this, they kind of do an ending like The Sopranos did and said, like, nobody's sitting on the throne. And the small council ran this thing the entire time. So why shouldn't the small council bring this back to the people and run it? And maybe, I don't know, Gendry's, you know, the head of things now.
He's
a Baratheon.
Yep.
You know, all the noble houses who were, you know, like the Freys are gone and they were a minor noble house. The Tyrells are gone. You know, the Lannisters after this will likely all be gone. Mm. Maybe Tyrion will still be around. I don't know. And you've got some Starks. So I would not be surprised if what they did was they said, you know what, you've got the North and you've got the other realms, and bring in like everybody from the, you know, who's in charge of those realms. And we're going to make this as close to a, maybe not a democracy, but at least something like an oligarchy.
But like a puppet monarchy? Like, let's put Gendry's dumbass on the throne because he's a Baratheon, and then we'll all rule through
him. Because if you think about it, you have all of these people, all of the best people who have experienced all of this and who have some sort of experience with either, like, I've been down in the mess and I don't want it anymore, or I know how to run things, Sansa, or, oof, you know, I have a modicum of wisdom, Sansa and Tyrion. Like, those are the people who are left,
yeah,
and who are least likely to be, you know, out in battle. If they're going to be knocked off, it's going to be somebody coming into where they are and getting them.
Yeah.
So it would be great if it was just like, all right, we're going to run this as sort of a rule of the people, and, you know, just in terms of who's in charge. I don't know. The Lady of Winterfell's doing pretty well. So, yeah, let's do that. But I think ultimately they might just learn, like, you know what, after all of this, the best thing for the realm is just to get rid of the Iron Throne altogether.
Yeah.
It would just be a trip if it was Gendry, because, you know, they went through such feats to try to kill off all those bastard children. And then Gendry just pops up at the very end, just has a seat and feels done. That'd be hilarious.
Yeah.
I think
yeah.
the one thing that would be better, and I actually said this as a joke, but the one thing that would be better is if it were hot pie.
Oh, that's hilarious. That's amazing. That's amazing. Now I have another thing that I want to have happen, which is Sansa is strategic as hell, and she marries Gendry, and Gendry sits on the Iron Throne, and then Sansa actually rules.
She should rule.
Which would also, like, totally hold with, like, the sexism of Westeros, that, like, there's a strong woman ruling behind, just like Cersei and Joffrey.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I could totally see Gondor going like, I don't know, I barely know how to read. What do you say, wife?
Yep.
Like,
yep.
Like,
that's
whatever
right.
She
and
says.
And cold-eyed ass Sansa's like, I'll tell you.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
There's no awkwardness between the fact that, like, he also took her sister's virginity? No?
I really don't think that's going to be an issue.
Yeah.
Yeah. That seems to be a minimal issue in this world.
No.
Melanie McFarland, TV writer and pop culture writer for Salon.com. Totally kick-ass analyst of the sexism of Westeros. Thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you.
Battle Tactics for Your Sexist Workplace is a production of KUOW Public Radio in Seattle.
Caroline Chamberlain Gomez, known by all in the realm to be greater at cutting than Aria when it comes to audio, is our senior producer.
Yes. We got production help this episode from Khaleesi, Claire McGrain.
Our managing producer is Brendan R.R. Sweeney, first of his name.
Big thanks this episode to Sir Tio Popescu, who makes all the beautiful graphics for our show, and to Mother of Dragons, Anna Boyko Wyrock.
Our theme music is by Kessia Gordon. Keep up the good fight. We'll have a new episode coming real soon, y'all.
Yay!